Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome. Great to see you. Now that I figured out how to turn my mic on, I can we can get started. We'll get the doors closed and get everyone in and settled. Hey, welcome. Welcome. Oh, don't trip. You got it. That was a great recovery. How was your first session? Good? Heather Semple was in this room for the first session, so this room is on fire, I'm sure, and we're prayed up, we're ready to go. Welcome, my name is Tim Guptill. Short introduction, I live on a small island in the North Atlantic called Graminan Island, and that's where I'm from. I've been in ministry 28 years in a variety of roles and capacities. I love beachcombing, coffee, and the Dallas Cowboys. Just going to offend like three quarters of the room right from the beginning. I have a daughter who's a freshman at IWU, and so I've been wearing this. And then Wesley Seminary caught me this morning and saw my IWU hat and gave me one of these. I'm an alumnus of the seminary as well. Very humbled that you chose to come to this seminar this morning. I'm not anxious. I've had people ask me, are you anxious or nervous? And that wouldn't really be helpful, would it? So I hope that what you get from me is someone who is relaxed and not anxious. No media this morning. You don't need more media. So you're going to a seminar on anxiety. There's no media, there's no handouts, we're just going to talk. And that's what Heather did before me too. She didn't have it. So if Heather can do it, I can do it as well. And I'm certainly open to questions and conversation along the way. I'd like to thank Ephraim Smith for the excellent job he did last night setting up my seminar. I thought his opening thoughts to my seminar were right on. My wife and I were sitting there together saying, oh, this fits so good with where I'm going this morning. And it is a theme for the gathering, the whole rest and stop and things like that. So that all fits. The work you are doing for God might be killing the work of God in you. This is not a clinic. If you came looking for a clinic, and if you need a clinic, this is not a clinic. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a therapist. I'm not even a counselor, although I know someone in the room who is. I could point them out to you, but that would make them anxious, so I won't do that. Today is more on the practical side of what I have learned from those professionals, and I hope that my story can help someone here today. We've got folks at home that are praying for you. There are people who are on Graminan Island in the North Atlantic, about 30 kilometers, though that doesn't mean anything to you, 14 miles from the coast, off the coast of Maine. Out there, there are Wesleyans who are praying for you this morning, and that this will be helpful. I'm going to give you a little bit of my story just to give context in the room, and then we will turn to talk about the road to health and sustainability. Does that sound good? All right. Everyone has anxiety, right? Everyone has some anxiety, not to the point of it being debilitating, but you need some anxiety. Anxiety tells you that you should probably run from a burning building, right? So, or anxiety tells you to avoid that person. Not at the gathering. None of us would do that at the gathering. You know, we wouldn't do that. But anxiety tells you. So you don't want to be completely anxiety free. If you're anxiety free, you would be like, oh, I think that bus is going to hit me. Like, you need some anxiety. So some of it is normal and you need it. Sometimes your anxiety is situational or environmental. You might be thrust into a high anxiety season, and it's just that. It's a season of high anxiety, and it's not normal. It's a season where your anxiety is higher than usual, but it won't last. We had one of those seasons in our lives last summer where our oldest, I just saw my son-in-law grin at me when I said that, where our oldest daughter graduated from Kingswood, and our youngest daughter graduated from high school, and then our oldest daughter got married, and we opened, our wife and I were opening a new business, a cafe that we opened, and then we took our youngest, we drove her from New Brunswick out to Indiana Wesleyan to begin her first semester there. And so that's not normal. Like, you know what I mean? Like, my wife and I, we approached that summer as, this can never happen again. This is a one-off. This is unusual. There will be seasonal or situational anxiety that goes with this. And I promise not to kill you. And you can promise not to kill. We're gonna ride this out. We know what it is. And we will survive. And we just see that's it. It's an unusual season. So you might be thrown into something like that. There are occupations that are more prone to anxiety than others. You might be, some of these that came to my mind would be military, law enforcement, paramedic, Speaker of the House. And I would put ministry on that list. I would put it on that. And then in ministry, on top of that in ministry, you have the spiritual weight of ministry that is an additional potential anxiety multiplier, right? I think we've got that added extra spiritual weight that goes along with it. And then there's chemical anxiety. All anxiety is chemical, but a prolonged higher than average threshold of anxiety might be diagnosed, not by me, right? I'm not a doctor. Remember that first part? But it might be diagnosed as an improper chemical cocktail that can be treated with medication. I took mine this morning. Okay? It can be treated with medication. So everyone has anxiety, say, let's just to help here in the seminar on a scale of 1 to 10, everyone has, you know, like 2 to 3 level. You need that. It tells you to run from a burning building. But not everyone lives or can live with your anxiety boiling on an 8 or a 9, okay? You can spike to 8 or 9 when you need to, but you can't live at 8 or 9, at an 8 or 9 level. So here's my story, the short story. I thought I was dying. I called 911 one day. I pulled over on the side of the road, called 911, told them where to come find my body, because my throat had closed off and I could not breathe, and I know that you can't do that for long. So, you know, this is where I am. And, come and get me. I remember not really feeling anxious about that. I just remember feeling like, this is not how I thought it would end. This is not where Ephraim Smith, he's got it all planned out. And, with peach cobbler. And, I remember just sitting there thinking, well, okay, I mean, this is it, but this is not how I thought it would end. But I didn't die. And there were a few other times, at least 3 other times, when I was rushed into the ER with similar symptoms, and they hooked me up to every monitor, computer, diagnostic, they hooked me up to everything, and they thought maybe it was an anaphylactic allergy, like, what have you eaten? Lobster, that's generally the answer. You're allergic to shellfish. You know, that's what they thought it was. And it took months for my doctor and I to come to the conclusion that what I was having were panic attacks. I was losing my battle with anxiety. So looking back then, I could see, now this makes sense and that makes sense. I can see it now, probably a 25-year period. And it was the last 5 years of that was in the microwave. So the first 20 years were probably crock pot. And the last 5 years were microwave, and where it escalated to the point of being clinical and very dangerous. If you have that type of anxiety, it cannot be ignored. You can't ignore anxiety and think you're going to win that battle. It just does not work that way. Okay? So again, I'm not a doctor, but I've learned from professionals who have helped me to see it does not work that way. If you don't deal with it, your body will. So eventually your body will say, that's enough of that. So The Perfect Storm, anybody see the movie The Perfect Storm? Did I mention I live on an island in the North Atlantic? My father, who's deceased now, was a sea captain his whole life and was out in the perfect storm that night. He was there. Here's my perfect storm, which we were reminded of last night when we saw the video early on in our general session last night of the couple where the pastor admitted he was burned out. And he said, you know, that he could see when they started naming the symptoms, he's like, I got them all. Like, you know, got them all. So here's my perfect storm. I had a strong undercurrent of unattended stress and anxiety that was escalating. A strong undercurrent of unattended anxiety and stress that was escalating. Okay? I was pastoring a large, growing church with growing demands. Churches, as they grow, get more complex, don't they? And you just, all you're doing is putting more animals in the zoo. Like, it's just, it doesn't. Where's the guy that prayed for me before the service? Is he here? Because he prayed, Lord, give him words that weren't even in his notes. Well, that was one of them right there. You just put more animals in the zoo, and it, yeah. So we're pastoring this great church that we love, and then I was literally awoken in the night with an audible voice from God, heard my name called several times, finally sat up straight in the bed and with my eyes wide open and said, I'm listening. Go ahead, caller. And the voice said, it's okay. Go to Moncton, which was do the transition with Dr. Laurel Buckingham, who's been there since he stepped off the ark. And the voice didn't say that. The voice said, it's okay. Go to Moncton. It's okay. I will be with you. And so in the morning, I had to have that conversation with my wife. I'm hearing voices in the night. And this is what they said. So, again, my perfect storm, I had the strong current of unattended stress. I was pastoring a large church with growing demands. I was called with an audible voice to do the transition with a mentor who I dearly love and we're still great friends, Dr. Buckingham. Then my father passed away. Then the move from that city was brutal on our family and our kids. Like, just stress meter goes, whoa! You know, just brutal, hard move, everything about it. Get to the new church and staff start to leave and people start to leave. The debt load of the church. Pastor Buckingham, you know, skipping with joy as he retires. Do you know that the mortgage on this church is $1,500 a day, every day of the year? And I'm like, shoot me now. You know. Every day. Every day. Tomorrow, the next day, the next day, the next, right? Then my brother passed away suddenly. This is all in the microwave. Then more staff departures and more people leaving. And then while all that was going on, I was assistant DS in Atlantic when we learned that David Leroy was seriously ill with cancer. So we were navigating. I had to navigate and do some leadership there on that transition and all that extra stuff. So that's what you call a perfect storm. That's not normal, right? To have that kind of stuff in a very short period. And those responsibilities were calling me to lead at the highest level of my life. And simultaneously, I was at the lowest health of my life. You see that? And if we showed you that on a chart, that does not add up. Because unattended anxiety and panic were consuming me. So my anxiety meter was pegged in the 8 to 9 range, and I needed to get it under control in order to be able to lead through those seasons of life, but I couldn't. And I was kind of like, for all of you my age or older, I was kind of like the yodeling mountain climber on The Price is Right. You know that guy? And I'm going off the cliff, right? And I'm singing, I'm yodeling like, oh, this is, you know, I'm going right off the cliff, here we go. You know, and for the younger people, they're like, what? And the yodeling mountain climber, what are we talking about? If your leadership demands are at a constant 8 to 9 out of 10, and your anxiety is running at an 8 to 9, you are on boil. That's where you are. You're on boil. And there are people, there are freaks who are wired for that. And if those two things aren't happening in their lives, they'll manufacture it. This is true. Yes, you know these people? Like if there's not enough drama happening to keep them on boil, they'll create it because they love to boil. They thrive on the boil. And it exhausts me, but it just, right? You can see the Dr. Buckingham coming out of me. Like you just, you know, boil for Jesus. Like it just, you know, but I am not one of those, I'm not one of those people at all. I would sit in my office for days on end and pray for a heart attack or a stroke. If you're sitting behind your desk and you're saying, could you just take me out? You're in a bad spot, right? If you're saying, I wasn't suicidal much. Maybe you're here and you are, and I'm not trying to make fun of that. I was just saying, for me, I was thinking a heart attack or a stroke, just something that would take me out and would set me aside for a season would be wonderful. That's where I was. I had very little margin. The word I use is thin. I was so thin. Every small decision was huge. It was big. And I tried to avoid even the routine conversations. I was empty. So I would come into my office and close the door and hide. And sit in there and think, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Our youngest was in grade 11. So I was trying to get her through high school. Reminds me, we've got one Kevin Myers here. The other one was here a few minutes ago. And the other, sorry, Kevin, but the other Kevin once was telling a group of us he was going to have a breakdown, and he said, I'm too busy to have a breakdown today. But I think next Tuesday I could. if I can just make it to next Tuesday. And so our youngest was in grade 11, and I was thinking, I got to get that kid through high school. I can't uproot the family again right now. It'll be brutal for her. So if I can just get her through high school, then I can have my breakdown. But I didn't get there. So everyone is different. We're all different in this room. And we all have different capacity for these things, for stress. And if you feel like your stress and anxiety are debilitating and critical, you have to assess your storm, and you have to consider what needs to be done or what can be done. And like I said, if you don't deal with it, your body will, and it won't be pretty. You either deal with your anxiety or it will deal with you. For reasons I won't get into, I was adverse to taking medications. My wife would previously have to, you know, almost force me to take an Advil. I just was adverse to medications. Now I'm an enthusiast. And again, without getting clinical, you need to hear this from your doctor, but long-term anxiety messes with the chemical balance in your brain. It just for reasons why I'll get to in a moment. And these things can be helped with non-habit forming prescriptions. And there are stigmas around that. We don't like to admit that my brain is sick. It's not my elbow. It's my brain that is sick and needs help. And to admit that I'm taking something right now for my brain to help it. My doctor at the time, he's still a great friend, and he went to the church, and I trusted him. And here are the big things that we discussed. And again, I can hear the voice of my wife in the back of my ear saying, these are things that were true for me, and I'm not saying that these things are true for everyone in this room, or that, you know, everyone's path is going to be a little bit different. Are we okay? The way that I was living, my stress and anxiety load were not sustainable, and my body was shutting down. So it took me a long time to get to that point, and then to admit to the people closest to me, my wife and I, calling Dr. H.C. Wilson and saying, can we come see you? He not knowing anything, and we go into his office and sit down, and I have to tell him, I'm not going to make it. It was a Thursday, and I said, you have to go meet with my board and my staff, and you've got to preach on Sunday, and you've got to tell the church that I'm not well. So I'm a man, you know, and men generally like to dig big, deeper holes. And so to finally, you know, say, I'm done. I'm at the point where I have to do this. At the very least, again, these were conversations with my doctor. At the very least, we agreed that I needed a medical leave of absence. There is no shame in that, to stop in the name of love, right? Before you break my heart, there's no shame in that. Some of my great heroes, even ministry heroes, have had to step aside, and they've had to, you know, get healthy before they can reengage, and that's okay. My doctor and I agreed that I needed to give medication a fair try. There's a long list of side effects, and I got them all. Just saying. My doctor and I agreed that I needed to go for counseling, preferably Christian counseling. I also had a stigma around that. I resisted it for the longest time. I was the person who, if I heard that somebody was going for counseling, I would have thought, that's weak. I would have been one of those people. Now I'm an enthusiast, you know. My doctor and I agreed that I need to make lifestyle changes. Again, not saying that this is what you need to do. I'm saying this is what I had to do. One of the things that I had to do, I don't even know where my phone is right now. I had to turn off all notifications. So I used to carry this in my pocket and have all the notifications set to vibrate. And what was happening was every time that thing buzzed, my just 8, 9, 10 out of 10, my anxiety just, it could be somebody saying, what's for lunch? It didn't matter because I was thin. I had no margin in my life. And every notification, if I opened this and saw that little red dot beside my email, you know, if there's in my mind, I'm thinking, there's another mess that I got to clean up. There's another hater that just left the church. There's you know what I mean? Like, you go there. And I would be, if you're afraid of checking your email, why? You know, what are the dragons that are hiding in your email and why? I used to have, cowards who would drop bombs in my email. And after a while you get so that you don't want any bombs in your email. And so then you're afraid of email because there might be loaded. There might be bombs in there, right? So I had to turn off all notifications. Vibrate, I had to turn it off. So it's not on now. So what do I do now? I check my phone periodically, and that's what I have to do. So that's what I have to do. That's what it is. I had to stop. I had to seriously limit how much news I watched. I would find that I was watching the news, and my anxiety was just, it was just crazy, going through the roof, and I had to turn it off and watch American Pickers. Right? Give me mindless TV. Just give me mindless Curse of Oak Island. Yes? No one? Curse of Oak Island? We live just a few hours from there. Yeah, it's real. He's on medication. There's a couple resources that I meant to have out. In Canada, we say out. 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 There's a couple resources I meant to have out. And I'm going to get them out while I spill the contents of my bag on this nice lady in the front row. I really like front row people. They're great. One of them is this book. My counselor pointed me towards this. And talks to me about anxiety, this is the book. It's called The Anxiety Cure by Dr. Archibald Hart. If you don't understand why your body is feeling the way it's feeling, this will teach you what you need to know about anxiety. What causes it? What is actually happening in your head when you're feeling this? Will a panic attack kill me? No, it won't. What are the symptoms of panic attacks? Right there, and I checked them all off. I got them all. And so one of the things, this is a Christian book, and one of the things early on that Dr. Hart talks about, Maya and I were talking about this earlier this morning, is this stuff right here. the nectar of God, boiled bean juice. And this stuff, you know, I need this to defrost my soul. And if you know me, you know, people who know me, they don't even recognize me if I don't have a coffee in my hand. And one of the things early on Dr. Hart talks about is this is lighter fluid on your anxiety. This is gas on the fire. So, you know, if I know somebody just say no. No. Yes. I had to go off of coffee for several weeks. I forget how long it was. And you know, for me, that's a big deal. Scripture. Luke 21, verse 34. There's so many great scriptures on worry and anxiety. Luke 21, 34, where Jesus says, watch out. Don't let your hearts be dulled by these three things. I added that, these three things, but there's three things he's about to mention. Okay? He groups them together intentionally. It's Jesus. Does Jesus know what he's talking about? Carousing, drunkenness, and worry. He says, don't let your hearts be dulled. Anxiety will do this to you, where you'll be sitting in your office praying for a stroke. Don't let your heart be dulled by carousing, drunkenness, and the worries of this life. This verse is part of a longer prophetic message of Jesus. He's talking about his return. And his caution is to beware, avoid, protect yourself, guard your hearts from the things that can dull your heart. And these things that he mentions, carousing, drunkenness, and worry. Guard your heart from these things. Dulled to what? Remember the context. He's talking about his return. Worry can dull your heart to the return of Christ. It can impair your mind and your spirit. And anxiety can impair you to the point where you lose your spiritual edge. And it's in this text right here. You aren't you when you're hungry. That's the Snickers commercial. We have Snickers in Canada, by the way. You aren't you when you're anxious. And Jesus tells us that. Some of the symptoms I remember, I remember one time being at a bank machine and put my card in, and then the screen was giving me all these options for other languages. And I was just starting to get upset. Why isn't English one of the languages? Where am I? Like, I know Canada is, you know, the whole world lives here, but come on, where's the English? English is the default language. Like, there's no button for it. It was in English. You get what I'm saying? I remember sitting at a four-way stop waiting for the light to go green. Right? Time to go home. You know, it's just time to go home if you're sitting at a four-way stop. There is no light. You're just sitting there waiting for the light to go green. Funny now, but Jesus says it's like drunkenness. It dulls your spirit. It's Luke 21, verse 34. So let's turn the corner here. A rough timeline of my journey back up the cliff. I started counseling probably in June of that year. I started meds in August. So that's how long I resisted the meds. And then in October, my wife and I went and sat with the DS and said, I got to pull the plug or the cord or whatever you want to call it. I can't speak highly enough of good Christian counseling. We all have stuff. You got stuff. You got junk. And you've got pain. You've got stuff that you're burying down deep. And what is that stuff doing, that unresolved stuff? Is it getting better? Is it down there making an apple pie or something? No, like it's rotting you, right? Is what it's what it's doing. And you won't peel that onion without professional help. You won't. You can't. You need a professional who can sit with you and talk to you and trigger point counseling. What are those things? What are those things? Why are you hiding from your email? Why are you closing your door? What are those things? And there are reasons why certain people and certain conversations and certain memories just jack your anxiety. And a good Christian counselor can help you with that. You have to face those dragons one at a time and slay them in the spirit. Face that dragon and kill it, defeat it in the name of Jesus. And then with your counselor, find the next dragon and kill that one. You just can't keep locking doors to all those dragons. Eventually they'll eat you. I'll be 50 this year, 28 years of ministry. 28 years. So I started in 91, I guess. Ministry is exponentially more complex today. It just is. The demands are higher. The expectations are higher. The comparisons are exhausting. Your people can watch any church they want to watch online and then compare you to what they watched online. And that ain't right. Shoot. You know? And that's what they do. And that's tough. The issues in the church are more complex. Whether or not your church should have gender neutral restrooms is a more complex issue than wearing slacks in the choir. See how the issues have changed? So it's hard. Go into all the world is not optional. Your church is called by Jesus to reach its full redemptive potential in that community before Christ comes back. Yes. Okay? The evangelistic reality or urgency demands that you and your church minister in ways that will best shine the light into the darkness of your community and reach the most people that you can possibly reach for Christ. I believe that to be true. Anything less is ministerial malpractice in my mind. Okay, so the expectations are high. I get that. And this, by nature, places huge weight and responsibility on the pastor. Because now, if that's true, our church is here as a light to shine the light of Jesus into the darkness and reach its full redemptive potential. Yes, reach people for Christ in our community. If that's true, now you're expected to lead and navigate change that will hopefully lead others to Jesus, and the only one who likes change is a wet baby. Right? So once you start changing things to try to reach, you know, doing new things to reach new people, you will get emails from cowards. And good people will leave your church. And people will stop giving because that's how they vote. They vote with their money. Right? And new people will come in. New animals in the zoo will come in. But they all bring their junk and their issues and their stuff, and they don't start giving right away. So you've lost old giving, and you've replaced it with these new folks who, there's that lag, right, of giving, the giving lag. And the grumble meter in the church will be high, and it takes skill and wisdom and capacity and intestinal fortitude to lead a growing church. And it's stressful. But you know what? If your church is stuck, That's stressful. And if your church is dying, like if you're serving as Pastor Kevorkian, that's stressful. I know pastors who, like, they called me here to pull the plug. And that's stressful. That's not easy either. And then you go to the gathering, and the first person you bump into says, "How's your church going?" And you just want to punch him in the throat. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, is there nothing else we can talk about, you know? And that's, it's locker room. Why do we do it? We just do. I was guilty of pursuing fantastic over faithful. I'm not against church growth. And we had a lot of fun pastoring growing churches and seeing lives, baptizing people in the name of Christ. Nothing fires me up like that. Many people called into ministry. But success is a temptress. And she can lead your soul to pursue fantastic over faithful. And when you are growing and your church gets a whiff of that, it's addictive. It's intoxicating. And they'll ignore a lot of other things as long as the church keeps growing. Growth breeds its own set of problems, because once you start growing, then you're expected to grow. And then you've always got people coming to you saying, "What's next? What's next?" And then you realize, "Well, I'm supposed to have an answer." "I don't know. We're going to do church on Sunday." You know, that's next. You know, and past people want to know, what big, crazy, audacious vision goal do you have up your sleeve? And there is a command to go into all the world. We established that. But there's also a command to be still and know. You got to manage the tension between those two things. Be still and know that He is God. If your striving outpaces your trusting, you will eventually run yourself into the ground. If your striving outpaces your trusting. So how do we exist in ministry with these realities? It's both. It can't be just stop. We heard that fantastic message. And it can't be just go. Right? It's kind of stop and go, isn't it? Both. Your number one responsibility as a pastor is to guard your relationship with Jesus. I think. It's my seminar, so I get to say that. If you've got another number one responsibility, you don't get to share it because you're not running the seminar. To guard your relationship with Jesus. You can lead out of your brokenness. You don't have to be perfect. But at all costs, you have to be in a place where you can feed and teach and share and minister to others out of the overflow of your relationship with Jesus. You don't have to be perfect. And you can minister out of your brokenness, but I think people expect you to, like, not stay broken, you know, like, they want to see you taking steps towards health. If you can't lead yourself, you should not be leading others. Who you are, I think Ephraim said this last night, but it was already in my notes, trust me. Who you are is more important than what you do. And on that note, he drinks coffee because he's healthy and he can. Yeah. You have to know your body. You have to know your capacity for stress. My capacity for stress is not the same as Dr. Buckingham's. We would meet on Monday mornings, 7 a.m., because he's already been up for 4 hours. And I would drag my sorry bag of bones, my carcass, into his office, and he would not say good morning. He would launch into his list, because he always has a list. And And did I mention I love him? And this guy's my mentor for many, many, many years. And then he would catch himself like 10 minutes in, like he's gone straight for 10 minutes. And he's, oh, I'm sorry, Doc. How are you? And I would say, I'm exhausted. Well, so my capacities, we're different people. So your capacity is not the same as Joe Mega Pastor. Joe Mega Pastor is a freak. Okay? They really truly are. Their God-given capacity for these things is out of this world. They're astronauts. It's out of this world. It really truly is. And so as their ministries and churches grew, they had the capacity. Right? Okay. So I know, and Jay and Kevin are here, and other people from Atlanta, Canada know of a church of about Rock Church would be how many people? 600 people? Where just recently the lead pastor and the executive pastor flipped roles permanently. So the lead pastor said, you would be better at this than I am. Why don't you be the lead pastor and I'll support you? And I think that's pretty cool. Just recognizing your strengths and your capacity and your giftedness and all those. And there's no shame in that. And everybody celebrated it and said, yeah, you know, that's cool. Now, in this Tim Guptill, I'm very clear and upfront with my church about who I am and what I can do. I can give you this, but I cannot give you that, you know. And if you need someone who's doing this, that's not me. I cannot give you that. This is what I have to offer in this season of my life. I use the word thin a lot when I'm describing myself in an anxious state. If you are avoiding meetings, topics, decisions, and conversations that could be stressful, something should be telling you those are warning signs. If you're avoiding, you're thin and you're avoiding those things. If you are avoiding larger projects, ambitious goals because of what they will require, if you are short, unusually short on patience, quick, moody, you say something to somebody you love and you're like, that's not me. That's not who I want to be. You're thin. If you dread going to work, like if you pastor a church and you don't want to go to that church, this is not good. That's not good, you know? If you fantasize, I'll just keep my hand up because this next one. If you fantasize about retirement, just being done. I don't know how many times my wife has said, you are too young to retire. You cannot retire. If you consistently disregard the indicators that you're losing this battle to anxiety, and you continually disregard those indicators, we have to model to our congregations that it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to ask for help. It's actually the weak who do not ask for help. The strong people ask for help. Okay? If I could do this over again, if I had it to do over again, what would you do differently? I would have been more upfront with people. I would have told my staff, my board, and probably the church that I was losing the battle to anxiety and I need help. But I didn't do that. So that evening I had the conversation with HC. It was too late because I didn't do those other smart things that I should have done. If people know that you're committed to getting better, they will hold your arms up. If you are bent on destruction and won't accept the voice of others, you will burn out. And at all costs, you have to create sustainable rhythms for you. Anxiety is the result of long-term chronic stress without making time for rest and restorative rhythms. A sabbatical is a stop in the name of love. But if you're coming back off a sabbatical to an alligator swamp, right? How good is your sabbatical if you know you're going to be up to your eyeballs in crocodiles as soon as you get back? Like, you're going to dread coming back to church. Be careful, as I said, of creating an appetite for hype in your church. It cannot be sustained. And if you create an appetite for hype in your church, the second that you gear down a little bit, all the people who are intoxicated by hype will go looking for hype at another church in your area. The next big thing. And you created that animal. You taught them to look for hype. As I was writing this, in my home, we've got this patio doors. It's up high, and I sit in this recliner. You don't really feel bad for me. And out my doors is the Atlantic Ocean, right there. And as I was writing this, a bald eagle flew by, and I thought, I'm just going to put that in my notes so everybody knows how good I have it. We have to pursue personal health before church health, or neither will be healthy. Okay? A sick pastor does not make a healthy church. People will smell you out. They'll know that you're not smoking what you're selling. Did I mention I'm from Canada? We have government-run cannabis stores everywhere. Like, it's like Walmart. I'm not joking. Like, I'm not on cannabis. But I'm saying, but it could be. No. If you're fake and trying to convince people that you're okay and you're not okay, they'll tell you he ain't smoking what he's selling. We need to pursue deep spiritual health and leadership. You are, as a pastor, you're calling people to deep spiritual health, yes? But if you're not pursuing that yourself, you're a fake, you're a poser. You're a phony if you're not pursuing that yourself. I'm often an adjunct professor with Wesley Seminary in their spiritual formation. If you enroll at Wesley Seminary, you have to take spiritual formation courses the whole way through your program. And I get to teach in the spiritual formation department. And I'm so glad that we make this a requirement of these students, that your spiritual care is it just can't be ignored. Like, you've got to get that. Or you can't lead other people into spiritual care. Otherwise, you're a fake, you're a phony. It doesn't matter what you learn if you don't learn how to be with Jesus. And you can't give people what you don't have. And you can't teach what you don't know. I think we're just about done. So The Anxiety Cure by Dr. Hart. Emotionally Healthy Anything by Pete Scazzaro, right? There's like the emotionally healthy, you know, chicken soup for the soul kind of, like, they've got the series now, but they're all really, really good stuff. Exodus 14:14, the Lord will fight for you. Just stay calm. Isn't that great? The Lord will fight for you. Just stay calm. How to reach me? Facebook, Tim Guptill. When I was thin, I never would have told you how to reach me. Never. Bob Goff puts his phone number in the back of his books. You can call. You can call Bob. He wants you to call him. I'm like, that's crazy. That summer when I was at my worst, Peter Moore, our district superintendent, preached at Moncton Wesleyan and thought it would be a great idea to give 1,200 people my cell phone number from the stage and said, you should text him an encouraging message. My wife and I were driving through Montreal, and my watch went on fire with all these text messages, and it wasn't helpful. So when you see Peter Moore around, mention that to him. Tim's got this little twitch. Give Peter's number. Find me on Facebook. Find me on Messenger. You can text me, 506-662-4525. And I'd love to chat with you and offer help and, whatever I can do to help you, I'd like to help. Thanks again for coming. Our time is up. God bless you. Have a great day. Thanks.